self-determined, transformational, and grateful.
Friends, as you probably already know, your relationship with money is just that, a relationship. You must be mindful of how you contribute to this relationship if you want it to be healthy. And today, I talk with fellow podcaster and wealth management queen, Hillary Hendershot. Hillary gets to help women across the globe reach financial freedom every single day. But this isn't just something Hillary helps people do. She knows firsthand what it's like to be at rock bottom. There was a point in Hillary's life where she struggled with financial insecurity. But this wasn't the breaking point for her. It was the starting point. Determined never to hit rock bottom again, Hillary began her wealth adventure by understanding how to live within her means and build upon that. She's here to share her story and the secrets to her success with you.
This is Heather Vickery, and you're listening to The Brave Files, stories from people living courageously. When we choose bravely in big and small ways, it powerfully elevates our lives. I hope these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement of courageous living that enriches both our lives and our communities. And if you enjoy the show, I ask you to please share it with others. Maybe think of someone who you want to choose bravely right alongside you. Thanks for tuning in. Now here's the show.
Hey everyone. I am so excited to share today's guest with you because we are talking about a kind of bravery that I don't think folks spend a lot of time thinking about. Hillary Hendershot is a wealth management badass who started out as a massive overspender who couldn't even force herself to open her bills and pay them. Hillary got herself into and subsequently out of some massively sticky situations, but ultimately chose transparency as a way out, which is also crazy, crazy brave. She's the host of the fantastic podcast, Profit Boss Radio. Hillary, welcome to The Brave Files.
I am so happy you're having me. I'm just like blown away. Thank you.
It's fun. I heard you giggling as I was doing the intro. It's such an interesting story because you've been in finance.
I know.
Like you're almost your entire adult life, right?
I mean, I have a bachelor's degree in economics. I used to tutor the math portion of the SAT. Like, I've just always, I do have a head for numbers. So I have this strong analytical, natural skill set. And then it just seemed like I couldn't figure out how to not spend more money than was in my darn bank account. It was wild. It was very difficult.
So I have been a guest on your show, which was a lot of fun. I think it was episode 188, and I loved that conversation. I talked a lot about my background with money, but I didn't hear anything about yours. So did you grow up financially secure?
It was episode 188, Heather. I'm actually floored that you remembered that. So it's episode 188 of Profit Boss Radio. I grew up, I would say, just above poverty level. We had enough money. I didn't want for anything that I needed, but I wanted for a lot of things that I wanted.
Yeah.
And my parents struggled to get along about money. They got divorced when I was six, and the child support payments were always like a big deal. And so it was like a source of pain and struggle and force and manipulation and power. And, you know, there's this funny story is I'm 5'10", right? So when you're tall, everyone says to you, oh, you will play basketball. So I went and played basketball. And it's like not an option to not play basketball. Everyone on the team had brand name Nike high tops, right? Nike high tops.
Yeah.
Okay. And my mom took me to Payless Shoe Source to get my shoes. And so do you remember Pro Wings? That's the
like knockoff brand, right?
It's the brand at Payless Shoe Source. And so I called them, I wanted Nikes. I called them Likies.
That's awesome.
But to me, it was like massively contradictory or like an issue. Here I'm the starting center on the basketball team and I'm wearing generic high tops. Like it just seemed wrong to me. It was embarrassing. Mm. And so whenever I, got my first job, I just immediately started spending every dollar of every paycheck. And then, of course, a girlfriend introduced me to the Visa monster in college. And so as soon as I could spend money I didn't have, I did that too. And it was like, it never occurred to me when I'm at the point of sale, right? Like I'm handing over this credit card,
well,
spending money.
Well, it doesn't feel real. No. It's Monopoly money. Yeah.
It never occurred to me that I would have to pay it back.
And then and some.
It seems so ridiculous to say it, but like for real, I never thought about it. That credit card balance was either going to get bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
And eventually bigger just doesn't work.
No, it's interesting because I have four kids and I know you have a child and I don't talk to them. I talk to them about whether or not we have money built into our budget or, you know, expendable money for extra things. But I don't ever say now I'm paying off my credit cards. We don't have that conversation. Do you talk to your daughter about that?
Well, my daughter's five.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I started showing her the bills at dinner, like just showing her what the line items look like. I show her
really?
That I tip. I talk to her about how much I tip. You know, she got $5 from the Tooth Fairy. And so one time at dinner, I said, well, I just spent $100 on dinner. So how many teeth would you have to lose to pay for dinner?
Smart, mommy.
And of course, she's not going to deduce 100 divided by 5. But the point is, I was like, 20 teeth, like all those teeth would have to fall out of your mouth in order for you to pay for one meal. And I pay for 3 meals for you a day. She's like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Well, and then the trick is to do that and bring the money awareness, but not with the scarcity and not with the fear that, oh, money is so bad and it's so scary, which it doesn't sound like you had. You were like, hey, free flow. money go.
I was definitely like, I definitely wanted to do nice things for myself. And I wanted people to think that I was already rich. And so I would have bought you drinks and dinner. I would pay for the trip. Let's go to Vegas. Let's go to New Orleans. Let's go to Miami. Like, let's do it all. And sure, I'll pay. I'm blanking on the word right now, but the kind of person who really likes creature comforts, and that's not a past tense. I'm still that person, right? Like,
yeah.
I get a massage a month.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, I love it. But now I can afford it. But, you know, and clothes and the makeup and the whole nine.
So you've got a knack for numbers, which is not, I do not have that. So I admire folks who have it. You went into finance and you were working for your father's company. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My father mentored me into the wealth management business. So I started with his firm and I was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years into that when I had my financial crossroads, my crisis of existence. Like literally what happened is I just stopped being able to borrow money. Like I had so much debt racked up and then my income went down because of the Great Recession.
Oh.
And so my credit cards were maxed out and my bank accounts were empty. I lost a condo to foreclosure. I had to walk my leased BMW, the keys to that car, back into the credit union. I just like literally put the keys to this car that I could no longer afford on the desk of the person, like the loan officer. And I was like, this is now your problem, not mine. And I'm shortening the whole thing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But everything I just said totally happened. So
yeah,
I was pretty hypocritical to be advising multimillionaires on how to manage their investments during the day, and then like not even being able to do my own arithmetic at night.
Yeah. Well, but it wasn't lack of ability to do it; it was lack of interest or desire or honesty about doing it, right?
It was a lack of literally a healthy relationship to money. I didn't get it. I didn't have it. I wanted more than I had. My relationship to money was there's never enough of it. And so I took a bunch of actions that, of course, manifested there's never enough money. When you overspend your money, guess what? It's a not virtuous circle.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really fascinating perspective. we talked about when I was on your show, we talked about, for me, I have always, strangely, and I don't know how or why, I had a really positive money mindset. I just trust that it will find me, that it's abundant, that it's there, that I am wealthy, and not just in bank accounts, but in all the ways. How much does mindset play into it for you now and then, even as you started to go through this change back then?
Well, and that really is what I figured out, is I had this insight. You know, you get downloads from the universe every once in a while, and I had this insight. Okay, so I have really good intentions. Like, my money intentions are good. I don't want to be broke in debt and like defaulting on loans. I just have bad results. So what's causing my results has to be my behavior. What causes my behavior has to be my psychology, right? And I look around and I see, you know, I mean, there's plenty of examples of people who are millionaires, centimillionaires, even billionaires, who didn't have necessarily advantaged beginnings. And so it can't be that. It can't be that there's something innate about me that just cannot or will never be wealthy. It has to be that I just am missing this relationship to money piece. And what I did was I started studying money psychology. And, you know, you go, said simply, and if you go, like, what the neuropsychologists already know is that a big portion of our view of life, our experience of life, has to do with what we say and believe. And that's especially true when it comes to conceptual aspects of life, such as time. So you'll notice that your experience of time is often a function of what you believe. If you believe and say that you're too busy and you don't have time, well,
you
guess
will be.
What? yeah. And money can be the same way. And yes, you still have to have those technical skills. Like, money is a skill set, a learnable skill set. You still have to have those skills, but the source of all of that has arisen for us in language. And so that was the piece I was missing, the beliefs part. And that was the real journey I had to get on.
So how did you get on it? I mean, I heard you say that the bottom fell out, right? There was no more money. You had an empty bank account. You owed a lot.
Yeah.
What happens from there to the other space?
So I literally pulled that leased BMW into, and I talked about this in my TEDx talk too, about it. I was in this leased gorgeous 330 CI convertible BMW, because of course, like I said, I wanted all those creature comforts. So of course I leased a convertible BMW, right? I mean, today I drive a Jeep Wrangler, but anyway, I pulled it into the gas station. All my credit cards were maxed out. My bank account was empty. So there was nothing on the credit cards. The ATM card wasn't, because there's no money in there. And so I had to leave that BMW at the gas station. And I walked home. It was really like a crisis. And I walked home. And I just got really clear that if I didn't make a dramatic change, like, my life was going to continue to be full of this BS that, you know, I had financial emergencies. My parents would have to bail me out. I was constantly like robbing Peter to pay Paul. It was like a lot of stress and anxiety that I was creating with my financial behaviors. And I thought, okay, starting right now, the only thing that matters is I do everything the opposite of the way I've been doing it. Like, I don't care, but this is not what my life is like. I'm not down with my life continuing on this path, right?
I don't want this anymore.
Yeah, I'm like done. So I decided to figure it out. And I mean, I think at that time my salary was 60 grand, and I figured out how to live and save, and at that point I was paying off debt on that amount of money. And then I literally started just doing anything. I mean, going to listen to speakers, reading books, literally studying the psychology of money and neuroscience, like the impact of language in our lives. And I started being willing to say new things about money. I went to friends and family and said, I don't know if you've figured this out, but I'm totally broke. Like, I have royally screwed up my financial life. I'm not going to be able to spend any money. I literally opted out of Christmas with my family. I called or emailed them all and said, I'm just not, I'm not in this year, right? And that was just one example mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. just like really being wildly transparent and honest. And I was, it was embarrassing. I moved back in with my mom. I lost my condo to foreclosure. So I'm like 28 years old, like dating and living in my mom's guest room. And I mean, thank God for my mom. I came back to my condo one day, and this was about a month into the, maybe 2 months into this whole thing, like after the BMW event. And there was a padlock on my front door. So wow. There was a cliff there. This morning I had a condo, this afternoon I don't. But I hadn't paid the mortgage in months, you know, I couldn't. And so and that's why one of the words I chose was self-determined, because I just really have the experience of like choosing activation energy, generating the discipline. Like I was going to turn this area of my life around, kind of come hell or high water. I was very determined, right?
Well, you knew exactly what you did not want ever again.
Yeah, it was like not willing to have those issues happen again.
Yeah. Let's explore a little bit this idea. And I love this, how obviously it was miserable and uncomfortable and embarrassing, but you made the conscious decision to process this, you know, sort of out loud and be really transparent with everyone about it. Was there like an internal conversation about that? Like, what led you to saying, I'm going to just tell everybody the truth and it's going to be okay and we're not going to do that again?
I had participated in a little bit of personal development, and I had the experience, or like the realization, you know what I mean when I say you realize something about life, like it's like, oh, that's a truism. Like that's capital T true. And I didn't know it before, is that I thought sharing, the old me thought sharing made you a smaller person, but I had this realization that sharing actually makes you a bigger person.
Yes, it does.
And so I just trusted that truism. I just said, I'm just going to learn, use all the lessons I've learned before now. And I kind of needed to come clean with people, because I was so inclined to pick up the check, and I was so in, like, I had this identity about how I would spend money, and I'm sure it was much more cemented for me than it was for them. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not an Alcoholics Anonymous, but I imagine if you go from being a drinker to being a not drinker, you have to say something. Like it probably works better if you like declare it with people.
I would say so. Now, how did your friends and families and loved ones respond?
I think, let's see. I think the noise in my head was very loud at that time. So I'm not sure I was really listening for their reaction, because I was so clear, like, this is how it had to be. But, you know, like if you had called me up and said, Hillary, let's go out for a drink on Friday, I would have said to you, Heather, I would love to. And if we have a drink, you have to pay for it, because I don't have any money right now. And you cannot pay
That's
for it.
That's fucking gutsy. It really is.
And I forced myself to do it, right? And for the most part, other people paid for me for a while. It was like...
And they probably didn't even mind, because you had paid for them forever.
I know, exactly. I'll just start paying off this account that I've like stored up with you, Hillary, for the vacations you've taken me on.
I'm sure nobody thought of it as tit for tat, but they also probably didn't have negative feelings about it. I don't know.
They certainly didn't say it out loud to me. I mean, I remember one time this person I was dating said an offhand comment to me. He said, well, what do you want me to say? You live with your mom. And it was like,
of course I have to pick up the check. That's not the guy you married, right?
No,
different guy.
No, but I'm actually still friends with him. But I mean, that was like, it was like a being stabbed in the heart. It was like, yeah, I live with my mom. It's like, you can't couch that.
Mm-mm.
But other than that, everyone was generally supportive. I'm sure, you know, because I was working for my father, and like I said, I was having these financial emergencies where he would have to bail me out. So I'm sure he was glad that he didn't have to bail me out financially anymore.
I'll bet. Yeah, I'll bet.
I just think I live a lot more out loud than my mom's inclination is to. So I think all the sharing that I do, it maybe is a little
makes
off
her uncomfortable.
For her. I think so. That's my hypothesis. I could be wrong. I don't know. I've never asked her because I don't know that I want to know.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of the life that you lead. And that's actually exactly what I was going to lead into. The business that you run is this really honest, open, transparent, here's where I've been, I can help you. At what point in your journey did you decide, because you are still in wealth management, you're in wealth coaching, you're going to describe what you do better than I could describe what you do, but when did it become clear that you wanted to help other people not be in the position you had been in?
It just, at some point in the journey, you know, it was an evolution, obviously, but at some point I realized I do actually have things headed in the opposite direction. Like, I've actually righted the ship. My rate of change has increased over the years, but there was a time it was like, okay, I've actually learned healthy financial behaviors. I have literally financial abundance. I have more money than the debt is paid off. I'm saving money. And I thought, there are a lot of people in the world who have and have had the same issues. Like, money mm-hmm. issues are very common. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how amazing that I've really threaded the eye of this needle. And like, if I've acquired a skill set here, I think it's teachable. And I thought, like, I could really make a difference if people knew, if I could show them what I've learned without them having to reach the financial rock bottom I did. Seems like that would be me leaving the planet a better place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been teaching wealth and profits coaching, financial coaching for, oh God, probably a decade now. I mean, the program that I offer has, and the offer itself has evolved a lot.
Sure.
But it naturally dovetailed with wealth management, right? So they're very complementary offerings. So it seemed very serendipitous. The whole thing came together. So it's kind of lovely.
It is lovely. So much. So I mentioned, in fact, I just emailed you, I don't know, last week, about the book, A Happy Pocket Full of Money. I don't know if you've looked at it or not.
It's sitting on my nightside table
right now. I love that. I love that initiative. You're like, I shall have it now. and so he doesn't really talk about the neuroscience of it, although I think that's incredible, but the quantum physics of it. And a huge portion, I'm in love with that book, by the way, a huge portion of it is dedicated to we receive when we give without expectation. And so when I'm hearing you talk about helping other people and not have to hit rock bottom, I wonder how much of it is that. I mean, obviously they're hiring you and they're paying you, but this giving of them and supporting and helping them be what, like, wealth comes to us when we help others become wealthy in whatever way that is. Is that something that you're conscious of, that you think a lot about?
So much. I say I'm spiritual about money. I think a lot about everything I do now. and it was something for me to decide to charge for what I do, because
I'll bet.
Yeah, I would love to give it away. And then there's all those things, like, if you don't charge, they don't value it and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. But mm-hmm. of course, it would, again, be hypocritical for me to run a profits coaching program that wasn't profitable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to, I have gotten away from that thinking that if I take money from someone, I'm leaving them in a worse off position. I really see money as a flow now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm not left with, this person paid me $10,000 for coaching and like, I feel bad about that. That used to occur, but it just really doesn't anymore. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I have to imagine that a lot of the reason, first of all, yes, it's hard. I see so many people as a coach myself who really struggled to charge people for what the service that they provide. But when you know that the service you provide changes lives and makes a difference, I'm sure they're making many times more than what they're spending with you if you're doing your job right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had multiple clients. Actually, this morning we just got the Yahoo. I just got the keys to my new house, purchase real estate in California.
Ooh,
so it's like, yeah, it was like, that was their goal when they were in the program, you know, and it takes them a little bit of time, but like they're saving multiple six figures and buying houses. And it's like, yeah,
That's awesome.
We did that together. That's real value, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That absolutely is incredible. So you mentioned your sort of spirituality mindset. Same here, not religious, super spiritual, universal, all of that. And how often does that come into play for you in other areas of your life and your personal life? And I know specifically your daughter is in remission. Right?
She is considered cured from childhood leukemia. Yeah, she has a cured diagnosis. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Congratulations. I've followed your journey for some time. I mean, she's so young. I literally can't even spend a whole lot of time imagining the horror because I'm an empath and it hurts.
It does hurt. I told my husband, like, little did I know when I said, let's have a baby, it'll be fun. Like, oh my God. You don't think about what it's going to feel like if that baby almost dies. It's like, it's wild.
Yeah. No, we don't ever imagine that. How much of the mindset work that you've done helped you survive that and pass that on to her, really?
Well, let's see. I've done so much of it that it's hard for me to know what life would be like without it.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't be married to the man I'm married to. I know I would definitely be a divorcee. I would be unhappy. I would be blaming the world, right? Yeah. Like that's how I came out of adolescence. It's just how my personality got constructed. So I would have had a rough go of it in life if I hadn't gotten self-aware. So a lot. And, you know, my husband and I, we surround ourselves with coaches. Like I coach and get coached. And
yes, me too.
Yeah. because it's a constant evolution of the stories you're telling yourself and other people about your life. And, you know, I go through phases, for example, I mean, even still, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, or I think my first personal development course was, I was 24. So it's been 20 years. And, you know, I have to stop and acknowledge the significant cost to my life if I start complaining. And I am so inclined to complain. I just love to talk about what's wrong with other things and other people and how it didn't meet my standards and it wasn't good enough. And they felt they broke, whatever, you know, it just didn't go well. And it's like, Hillary, you know this, right? You know, so yeah. I have to check myself. So it's like constant gardening.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the honesty and transparency there. And when we were supposed to do this interview last week, and I had a scheduling issue. I had a couple different people scheduling things for me, and I accidentally had you scheduled at the same time as a corporate group coaching program.
Yeah.
And look, you know, that pays my bills. So I was like, Hillary, we have to change the interview date. And your response was so great. You said, thank you, A, for showing me that when I do this and make this kind of mistake, I'm just human. And B, you didn't write it just like that, but that's the way I read it. For not like blowing smoke up my ass and saying my kid is sick or I'm not feeling well.
Yeah.
And it honestly never occurred to me to be, it's not trying to say that I don't bend truths on occasion. We are all human, but like you are a businesswoman. And I knew that this, you know, you would understand, but so many times we try to bullshit ourselves. And I think that falls into that, you know, judging people. And we're afraid that we're not going to be wanted if we're honest about what we're thinking and feeling and doing.
Yeah. I have this accountability relationship. I call him my accountability buddy. And if I make a promise to him, accountability relationships are so valuable. I know this is like, I'm opening up a whole new can of worms.
I have a huge section of it in my book, Fuck Fearless. So yes, yes, yes.
Yes, you do. So if I make a promise to him, and let's say I don't manage the promise, or I don't do anything about it, or I just blow it off, inevitably, when I wake up the morning I know we're going to have our call, I think to myself, I'll just lie to him. Like, I'll just tell him I did it. And I'm like, Hillary, what is wrong with you?
Doesn't help anybody.
It's just my natural. And then I get on the call with him and I out myself. I always out myself. I said, I totally told myself to lie to you about this. And, you know, just the outing of myself, that is the thing I have to do, rather than keep the thing hidden. Because it was just a thought that I had. I didn't take
do
a
it.
Dishonest action. Yeah. And so to relate to it, like it means something about me, I would hide it. So if when I don't hide it, then that's how I manifest. This doesn't mean anything about me.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, yeah. That transparency to yourself, because he wouldn't have known the difference. It's about you. Do you ever have, I don't know what the right term I want to use is, I want to say money struggles, but I don't necessarily mean about the money that's coming in, but stressful thoughts or any sort of, do you have to talk yourself into feeling abundant? Does it ever creep back up?
I have scarcity conversations about the number of people on my email list and my Instagram followers.
The shit that email list might matter. Instagram followers clearly don't, but yeah.
I know, but it's just like, oh, they don't like me. I don't have mass appeal, you know, like that kind of thing. And of course, your email list, it does lead to money. So sometimes I do. My experience in life is I have more money than I need. So there's not anything that I need or want that I don't have. I'm financially independent, so I could stop working if I could retire. The only thing I can't afford yet is private planes.
Well, I can't wait to see that first picture on Instagram of you being like,
I think it's my goal. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that that's ever in my future. I haven't written it down. It's not something I'm pursuing, but it's like, you know, you get on the commercial flight and it's like, damn, I wish I could just not be in the plane with other people.
Especially right now. Yeah. You just said something that I heard very clearly because I'm in this space of doing this right now. You said it's not something I've written down. What are your sort of money and manifestation rituals that help you stay abundant?
So I reverse engineer every year. I mean, there's this, so energetically when you set goals, I don't know if your experience is of creating the future, like throwing your hat over the fence, or if it's of standing in the future manifested.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do both. And, I create the year and then I create the quarter. And then at the end of the quarter, I'll create next quarter. And I just have a bunch of structures and systems in my life to keep those goals, present. I feel like I'm not giving you a great or concise answer because there's sets of systems. I mean, I have a coach, we have the team meeting. My weekly team meeting is part of my accountability system because, you know, you set goals for the business and then you have to check in on them. Like you have to actually keep them top of mind. Otherwise, all I'm going to think about is my damn email inbox.
Do you have a manifestation list?
I do. I have. So I have so many documents. I have what I call my dashboard. So everything that's top of mind right now, I have my annual goals for the year. I also have a mission and vision. So like a future that we created for the company that we're fulfilling on, we're instilling divinely feminine traits into the world of money. I mean, it's like super like white robey and high level.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. So I have a lot of that stuff that I do. And then of course, you know, you have to get present to that stuff. So you have to have structures where you actually take time to remind yourself of what you said and created and are fulfilling on. And then it takes something to become someone who experiences, you're experiencing fulfilling on a future rather than responding to email and phone calls or solving problems. It's like, yes, you know, Heather and I are doing this interview right now, but I'm actually, what I'm up to is fulfilling on a future by doing this interview, right? And yeah, that can be as much of your day as is possible.
I love that. Yeah. I am so in this space right now, and it's so exciting to hear you talk about it. What, somebody's listening to this and they're still sitting firmly in that sort of scarcity space, never going to have enough, can't imagine not having to worry about money. Mm-hmm. I know I meet people like this all day, every day. And it's so hard to help somebody to say, well, the first thing you have to do is not say that, like not think that. Stop thinking that. Like what? It's like, don't go in that door. And you're like, I have to go in the door. But what would you tell them to do? Like, how do they start?
Yeah, I created a 7-step framework. It's really super simple. I call it the 7 steps to wealth. And the first step is to decide. So you're absolutely 100% correct. It's not exactly the words I would use to say it to people, but I
it doesn't work. Trust me.
Yeah, stop saying that. Just stop saying it. You know, the first step is to unseat certainty. So you run around like, what you say about money is true. Like, we live in a world where until we realize that something is the way we say it is because we say it is, until you really know that as a human being, you live like the way you say it is the way that it is.
And that's right.
There is no is way about money. Like, money just doesn't have any true nature. Money doesn't have any characteristics. Money doesn't have a personality. Money doesn't abide by a narrative. And So the first step is really first you do have to decide you're going to change, right? Like if you're more interested in complaining about the world the way that it is, it's just going to stay the way that it is for you.
Yeah.
So you have to get willing. Like, there's a willingness that's required, but yeah, to begin to say, so this is my reality with money, but Heather's reality with money is different, and Hillary's money reality is different. So if all three of us are having a valid experience, that has to mean that there's no capital T truth about money,
yeah,
right? And so it's like this super, it lends itself to philosophical thoughts. So that's why I say I'm spiritual
sure does
about money.
It sure does. If somebody wants to grab that download, where can they find it?
Definitely start with episode 77 of Profit Boss Radio. Okay. It is called The 7 Steps to Wealth, and I go into each of the 7 steps. And so it's kind of like the foundations for everything that I teach.
Yeah, I think people are going to run over, because this is the number one thing that I find most of my clients and even just friends and social circles, like the number one block is I can't ever imagine not being needy in this space. So
yeah.
Does this work feel brave to you? And what you've been through in your life and your own journey, does it feel brave?
It sure as hell did at the time.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah.
Because I was so out there in new territory and when you say you're going to produce massively different results, and they're results that most of the planet also desires, and so you're mm-hmm. sort of out there on the skinny branches, like saying, I have no evidence for that I'm going to become financially abundant, but I'm going to become financially abundant. Like, I don't care how, come hell or high water, this is happening. And
I don't need to know how, but I will.
Yeah. Like, at some point, I'm going to have to figure it out. But for now, I'm just going to start doing everything differently than I've done it before.
That's awesome. That is funny.
And it's funny that you say, does it feel brave? Because I had an insight the other day, like, my life doesn't feel that brave anymore. So I guess I need to take on some big goals. Like, I need to start doing things that I'm not sure I'll be successful at. You know, when you're, I know this isn't about business, but it's like when you run a business and then the business is successful, you're more like running the business than growing the business. And growing the business is that's what requires courage, right?
Yeah. So absolutely. Like, well, I can't wait to see then what presents itself for you in that space. Because I do think that, like, even just from our own mental and emotional well-being, maintaining gets old fast. Like, we want at some point we want to try new things or grow or develop. And that doesn't mean you won't continue to maintain what's happening right now, but there may be other things to bring you tremendous joy or ways for you to change somebody else's life. And we have to be open to those opportunities.
Yeah, you have to have space for it.
Yeah.
It starts to feel like the opposite of autonomous, or opposite of autonomy.
Yes. Yeah.
Very well put. Oh, I built myself a job. That I didn't know that one. I didn't know.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I love that. Hillary, how do you celebrate?
So for me, there's just nothing better than sitting around the dinner table with a glass of wine and a handful of good girlfriends. For me, that's the juice.
That's lovely.
I just love it. I'm also a very joyful person good laughter, games. My husband and I, when we lived in California, we live in Puerto Rico now, but so maybe we'll start hosting games night again once I have enough friends to invite to games night, but I'm trying to
make
friends here.
I'll come to Puerto Rico just for game night.
How about that? All right, you do it. but I just love to play and be playful. I love to laugh and have other people make me laugh and just be silly. And it's super fun.
That's fantastic. I love it. And I love asking that question. I ask it every week because I think it's such an underrated life skill, celebration. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's nice for people to hear all the different ways folks celebrate and how maybe they are doing it and they didn't even know it. And just celebration begets more celebration. So
And more
to celebrate.
And you can really start to think you don't have time for it. It can start to feel really unnecessary.
It's super necessary, though. It really is. This has been amazing. My last official question that I always ask is, what is your favorite charitable organization to support? And we talked about giving and how important that is in receiving. So I'm very excited to hear your answer.
Oh, well, it's not going to surprise you. It's the Lucille Packard Children's Hospital. Yeah. So my daughter was treated for 2.5 years at Stanford Children's. So that organization, the charitable organization, is Lucille Packard Children's Hospital. And so we now give to them every year, and I will always give to them every year. I will love those people until the last day I'm on the planet, and then some.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing to know all the things. There are so many people who contributed to my life before I didn't know about it. I didn't know them. They don't know me. It's just wild to think about all the things that were done for me by people I don't know and have never met. All the people who participate with organizations like that, the doctors and the people who raise money and the people who give money, make it so that kids with cancer get treated it's no cost.
Wow.
They cured leukemia and then they made it free to get treated for it. It's just what? I don't know. Anyway, so Lucille Packard Children's Hospital.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing them with us. I'm so grateful for you and for your family that they exist and that they're able to help you. And folks, I ask every week, get to know them. And give, there are so many ways to give. We can give our time, our attention, our money, social media shares and likes, whatever it is. Get to know them a little bit. They'll be our charity of the week. So thank you for sharing them with us. Hillary, will you share your three words one last time?
You bet. So self-determined, transformational, and grateful.
Yeah. I see that. And they're incredible words. I think you're incredible. I'm glad to consider you a friend, even though we've never met in person. And thank you so much for being here and sharing your journey with us, because I know the listeners are going to love this.
I just really appreciate your interest and your time. Thanks, Heather.
Yeah, excellent. All right, folks, I want to hear how you are out choosing bravely. You can send me a DM on Twitter or Instagram at Vickery & Co. or on Instagram. I'm also at the Brave Files Podcast. Surprise, surprise. Come follow us, hang out, or you can come play with me on TikTok, which is my new playground. All real, all honest, all the time. I'm Brave Heather on TikTok. And I want to know what you're up to. Thank you for being here with us. This is Heather Vickery reminding you today and every single day to go out and choose bravely.
Hey, friends, I want to share something really exciting with you. We already know you enjoy listening to podcasts because you're listening to this one, but I'm also betting you enjoy audiobooks. And hey, listen, if you don't already enjoy audiobooks, then it's time to check them out. That's why I'm really excited to share Libro.fm with you. They are an incredible new platform for listening to audiobooks. And by choosing Libro.fm over other audiobook services, you are supporting a local bookstore of your choice and investing in your local community. Libro.fm offers over 150,000 audiobooks via their primary platform, which, by the way, they built with love and from scratch because they're a small business also. They even offer bookseller recommendations for great audiobook options. You can sign up right now via www.vickeryandco.com/librofm. That's vickeryandco.com/librofm. And when you do, you'll get one free audiobook of your choice, and the proceeds will go to your favorite local bookstore. Now, check what I just said there. You're going to get a free book, and the proceeds are still going to go to your local bookstore because Libro.fm makes sure that their booksellers get paid even when they give a promo to customers. I've listened to over 20 audiobooks this year alone. I especially love listening to memoirs read by the author, and it feels great knowing that all of my purchases support my local bookstore, The Book Table, in Oak Park, Illinois. Libro.fm. The same audiobooks, the same price, but a completely different story. Check them out right now at vickeryandco.com/librofm. Have you ever thought about starting a podcast? Maybe you've had this thought and then quickly shut it down because who has the time? Or you don't know how, or gosh, it just all seems too hard. If you have something to share with the world, we want to encourage you to get your message out. The world needs to hear it. Did you know that 50% of all homes are podcast fans? If you've ever wondered about having your own podcast or how it can increase your business or get your message across, then please join me and the other experts from the Podcast Power Academy for our monthly free Q&A session. It's called So You Want to Start a Podcast? This casual live conversation will help you understand how podcasting can be a great decision, why now is the best time to get started, and how to get into action with it. Visit podcastpoweracademy.com to learn more. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. To learn more about the show, find our show notes and full episode transcripts, or to get some great bonus content, visit thebravefilespodcast.com. And we would love to know what you think of the show. You can give us a call at 312-646-0205. Let us know your thoughts on the episode, the show in general, or maybe share with us how you're out choosing bravely. This episode is brought to you by Vickery & Co. Success Coaching. Coaching that helps you maintain a life well-lived and a business well-run. Learn more at vickeryandco.com. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom delivered soundtracks. We couldn't do any of this without our extraordinary audio engineer, Andrew Olson. Learn more about him and check out his work at findandrewolson.com. And special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. Special thanks to Molly, Mary, Kim, Sabra, and Sabrina. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.